We're nearing the end of the words of Narada Muni to King Prachini Barishat. He's already explained that which one of our acharyas has called Jnanamisra Bhakti, because he's not preaching the neutrality, Nirbandha Krishna Sambandha Yukta Vairagya. He's not exactly preaching from the point of view of bhakti, but he's trying to bring aversion within the heart of the king, Prachini Barishat, who is performing one fruit of sacrifice after another. He's performing pious activities for the purpose of becoming elevated in the material world. The Karma Mamangsa philosophers, they also wish to do this. They wish to follow the Vedas, the Vedic rituals, in such a perfect way that they gain material happiness perpetually, continuously. And from the point of view of material time, it appears to be eternally. Because if one is extremely pious, and this is a difference in the way that the Vedic culture, those in the Vedic culture, viewed happiness. If one is extremely pious, one gains happiness. It is impiety that brings suffering and misery. It is nothing but impiety that brings that. And again, it is piety that brings one's happiness. In contemporary so-called civilization, people try to become happy, to gain their happiness any way they can, and usually those ways are quite impious. Perhaps we can put it down a bit, a little bit. Impious. Impiety, do anything. In fact, there is no discrimination between piety and impiety, practically speaking. Just sense gratification, more sense gratification. I like it. This is the main criteria for doing something. I feel like doing it. I want to do it. I like it. And the result of that is simply ignorance, which means impiety, impious ways of acting and attempts at enjoyment, which only bring ultimately misery. So in the Vedic culture, people also desired to enjoy, but they were guided by especially the Karmakandiya section of the Vedas, which prescribed different sacrifices, and the result was piety. And piety, they understood, was the cause of their pleasure. Acting in a pious way that is good and pleasing to the Supreme Lord. But their desire was to be awarded with pleasure. And the concept of the Karma Mamangsas, who basically King Prachini Barishat was following, was that if I perform one pious activity after the next, 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 the result of that is going to be such an accumulation of piety that I'll never suffer. I'll just be enjoying within the material world. But the example of the flaw in that reasoning was King Riga, who performed unlimited pious activity, but he made one small mistake. It wasn't even a mistake. In giving away a cow in charity, he gave the same cow to two Brahmins just by chance, and he had to suffer in his next life as a lizard. So Srila Jiva Goswami explains that it is impossible to perform these pious activities without some flaw, some mistake. And therefore, one will suffer. One will suffer, even if one is trying for pious pleasure. One must occasionally do something wrongly, commit something, sin, some pop, And that ruins one's plans for just simply eternally enjoying in the material world. Kapila Muni has also explained the same point at the end of the third canto, that despite one's going to higher planets, it is still temporary. Puna Arvatana Arjuna, and one must come down to the material world. So he's already explained previously Paranjana's attempts for pleasure, that they end only in suffering. And Prachini Barishat has to understand this. He has to understand there is no hope. There is no hope whatsoever on either on the gross platform, the sensual platform, or on the subtle mental platform, gaining enough prestige, lava, puja, pratishtha, adi. They are all upasakagan, ultimately. They are weeds. And these two concepts, that I can be happy on the gross level, gross physical level, or on the subtle material level, on the mental level, by gaining some position in the material world, some situation, because this is the hope of a materialistic person, that some situation, if I can just manipulate the material energy sufficiently, push this out of the way, grab that, that I'll find that situation that is going to bring happiness to the parched heart, parched and desert-like heart. So Narada Muni wishes to convince him that there is no situation in the material world. If we wrote a long list of everything, we unlocked all the recesses of our heart and took out all the desires that we hide in there, the good ones, the bad ones, the in-between ones. And if we took those out, and if we had the ability to satisfy each and every one of those desires, we still would not be happy. Prabhupada told the story of how there was after Gandhi, during Gandhi's time when he was trying for Indian independence, there was a famous barrister who was very, very, very wealthy, very successful under the British, named C.R. Das, Chittaranjan Das. And he was earning in like $50,000 or $100,000 a month. He was so wealthy. And sometimes he also explained that the Congress Party, he was a member of the Congress Party to remove the British. And they decided non-cooperation with Great Britain, who was controlling India. But he was making all this money in the court system, and he would lose everything. He said, "Let us cooperate, and I'll be able to. Every penny I make, I'll donate to Congress." But they said, "No, no cooperation." And he cooperated with Congress, and he gave up his position. But in any case, he had so much money, and Prabhupada explained that he was very popular with the people. He was very charitable. He was a womanizer. He would drink. In other words, anything that he felt like doing, he would do. And yet he was always morose, always unhappy, always unsatisfied in heart. So one day, he was sitting with his wife somewhere, in eating somewhere or something. And he looked so morose. And his wife said to him, "Chittaranjan, you have everything. The people love you. You perform sacrifices. But you're not happy. Why?" And just as she asked this is how Prabhupada explained it, one beggar walked by. And he said, "I want to be like him." And it wasn't even a religious renunciant not even a religious sannyasi or anything like that, just a common beggar. I want to be like him. All this wealth, Prabhupada didn't say this, but all this wealth, it doesn't satisfy the heart. No situation in the material world satisfies the heart. And until on the gross level, on the subtle level, if everyone in the whole world would say, oh, you're the greatest, you're the most wonderful, please accept this gift and this gift, still the heart would not be satisfied because it longs for service to Krishna and to be awake in that relationship with Krishna. And until we actually deeply reach this conclusion, and by Krishna's grace and whatever sincerity we have, until we pull from our heart or allow Krishna to take from our heart every single one of those desires by the power of the holy names, by the power of association, by the power of the Bhagavatam, by the power of the Dham, by the power of the devotees, by the power of the deities, by the power of the, just all the processes of bhakti yoga. Until we come to that position, that limits so much how much we can advance in our Krishna consciousness. But every step that we advance in our Krishna consciousness allows us, gives us the facility to pull out these anartas, these unwanted desires within the heart. They are not arta, they are not our wealth, they are anarta. These are our misery, actually, all these desires. So then we pull out some, then we can get some more attachment to Krishna. And then this is how the system works. So this is what Narada Muni has been explaining to King Prachini Barishad, and this is what Sanat Kumar has explained to Maharaj Prithu, that these two go hand in hand, side by side. Detachment from the material world and attachment to Krishna, both are required. Detachment from the bodily concept of life. So he's explained so much in this way, and he's going to explain still some more. And then his speaking is going to shift as onto the cure very, very strongly. He's explained so much. And now in text 29, he says, Narada Muni says to Prachini Barishad, who's performed so many unlimited pious activities, he said, covered by the mode of ignorance in material nature, this is text 29 in chapter 29, covered by ignorance. Ignorance means ignorance of our identity ultimately, who we actually are, and that cannot be defined without speaking about Krishna, Jivera Sarup Hoy, Krishner Nityadas. So covered by ignorance, the living entity is sometimes a male, sometimes a female, sometimes a eunuch, sometimes a human being, sometimes a demigod, sometimes a bird, sometimes an animal, and so on. In this way, he is wandering within the material world. This is Brahmanda Brahmati. Just wandering, just as these desires are within the heart. We look at someone, we become envious. Attachment and envy go together. If one is attached to something, he must be envious. If one is envious, it means he must be attached on the material level. So, wandering, and these desires sit in the heart, and they carry us. Adishtaya manastayam visevate yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tyajan yante kalevram. They carry us to our next body based on our desires. So in this way, the living entity is wandering in the material world. His acceptance of different types of bodies is brought about by his activities under the influence of the modes of nature. So it's covered by ignorance. We act in different ways. We develop different mentalities, different desires. And this causes our next birth. We'll read about halfway through, down through Prabhupada's purport, in the middle of the second paragraph. It is his misfortune that by forgetting his real contact with the Supreme Lord, he becomes a servant of Maya. Krishna bhule se jeev, anadya bahi mukha ta eva maya tare samsarera du. We turn our back on Krishna. We don't want to serve Krishna. Somehow there is a choice of the living entity. There is a misuse of freedom. And the result is we are caught by Maya and filled with so many desires, false desires. As a servant of Maya, he sometimes becomes a king, sometimes an ordinary citizen, sometimes a brahmana, sometimes a sudra, and so on. Sometimes he's a happy man, sometimes a prosperous man, and sometimes a small insect. Sometimes he is in heaven, and sometimes in hell. So this is all these results come from a combination of our desires and our piety or impiety. We see someone in a big, big, big car, one of those stretch limousines or something, and we think only if some attachment and envy enters our heart, only if I could have something like that. And then immediately a desire is planted in the heart. A desire is planted in that. I want this. And then we have to, by Krishna's grace, we will get these things. So we should be very careful in our desiring. Sometimes he's a demigod. Sometimes he's a demon. Sometimes he's a servant. Sometimes he's a master. Sometimes we become wealthy like Chittaranjan Dasa. And then then that's not satisfying. And then we desire to be a beggar, then we become a beggar. And the beggar looks at the wealthy man and says, only if I could become wealthy. And back and forth. And the men, they look at the women, and the women look at the men, and changing places. But none of these positions, no position in the material world. This is what Narada Muni wishes to tell Prachini Barishad. No position in the material world. And this is what Krishna has told Arjuna, Brahma Bhuvana Loka, Puna Avatar. There is no situation in the material world that can make us happy. In this way, Prabhupada continues, the living entity wanders all over the universe. Only when he comes in contact with the bona fide spiritual master can he understand his real constitutional position. That's Brahmanda Brahmate, Konya Bhagyavan Jeev, when he is fortunate, Guru Krishna Prasare Bhai Bhakti Lata Bhij. He then becomes disgusted with material existence. I don't want to have anything to do with it anymore. It is rotten. It isn't actually rotten, the material world, it is Krishna's. But from the point of view of I want to enjoy the material world, Ishwaraham, aham bogi, that point of view, we should understand it is a rotten place, a disgusting place. It is not suitable. Prabhupada said that it is not a place for a gentleman. It is a cruel place, actually. So at that time, he becomes disgusted with material existence. Now here is a very interesting instructions here. At that time, in full Krishna consciousness, gaining Krishna consciousness, he regrets his past experiences in material existence. Oh, look what I did. I've done this, and look how it's contaminated my heart. So many sinful desires have been planted there. I've done this, I've done that. I've caused pain to others. This regret, this lamentation is very beneficial because it purifies the living entity of material conditioned life. Because the real thing that we should learn from material life is I never want to make this mistake again. I don't want to imagine myself in the center of existence as the enjoyer, as the Purusha, Bhunte Prakriti Jani Ha. Because as soon as we think like that, Karanam Guna Sangasya, it causes us to fall under the grip of the three gunas, goodness, passion, ignorance, and then sarasa joni jama. So birth after birth, female, male, eunuch, animal, bird, insect, rich man, poor man, on and on and on and on. This country, that country, this country. So this regret, which is called humility, is very purifying to the heart. So he purifies him of his material conditioned life. But then what should one do? Should one just think, oh, I'm so fallen, I've done this, I've done that, I've done this, and all the time think of how fallen one is and how bad one is? Then one is just thinking about oneself all the time. And the mind loves to do that. It's self-indulgent. There is a material pleasure in just thinking how bad one is all the time. It's a mental disease, actually. It's neurosis. But this is not what we should do, just think about how bad we are. After this regret, Prabhupada explains, he then prays to the Lord to engage in his service. And at that time, Krishna grants liberation from the clutches of Maya. So that sincere and humble calling out to Krishna will cause Krishna to reciprocate and pull one out of Maya and engage that soul in his service. Lord Krishna explains this, Prabhupada continues in Bhagavad Gita 7:14. Daivye shagunamayi mama maya daratya. This divine energy of mine, consisting of its divine energy, daivye shagunamayi. It consists of the three modes, but it's empowered by Krishna, and therefore it is not breakable by any human being or anyone, any conditioned soul, because Krishna has empowered it to make it impossible to overcome. So this divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome, but those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. Mam eva ye prapadyante mayam etan tarantite. Only by the grace of Krishna can one get out of the clutches of Maya. So that means the instructions that Prabhupada gave were how to gain the grace of Krishna. And then by Krishna's grace, as he desires, one escapes from Maya. It is not possible to get out by mental speculation or other activities. When the living entity understands his real position by the grace of Krishna, he keeps himself always fit in Krishna consciousness and acts accordingly. What is the meaning of that? When the living entity understands his real position by the grace of Krishna, what is his real position? Yes. And also Trinadapi, because Trinadapi has to come before. That I am caught here, I'm helpless, and yet I'm Krishna's servant, but what kind of servant am I? Look at this, the quality of my consciousness. So one has to, that's the other aspect of one's real position, that we are caught very tightly by Maya, and yet we are Krishna's servant, and acts accordingly. So what is acting accordingly? Oh, there's another. Then what does he do when one actually realizes this? He keeps himself always fit in Krishna consciousness. He's very careful about his consciousness and his activities. He doesn't want to suffer in the material world, but he doesn't want to be inflated either in the material world. He doesn't want to be great in the material world, and he doesn't want to suffer in the material world. He doesn't want anything to do with the material world. So he watches his consciousness and keeps it very pure. And he acts according in such a way that Krishna will be pleased. He keeps himself always fit in Krishna consciousness. Just like if a person wants to be fit in body, there are so many people that are so health conscious. What do they watch out for? What do they... Fatness. What else?
Fitness.
How do they careful about how much they eat and what they eat, and they fit, they do exercise, they run, they go to the gym, they associate with fit people, not fat people, and they're very careful about they don't drink, they don't smoke, they want their health. They're very, very conscious. They let what is good for their health rule their life. They surrender to it. They accept what's favorable and reject what's unfavorable. So that's acting accordingly for someone who actually wants to be fixed in Krishna's service. Thus he gradually becomes completely free from the clutches of Maya. And when he is strong in Krishna consciousness, Maya cannot touch him. When he's detached from the bodily concept of life and attached from Krishna and acting in this fit way, then Maya cannot touch him. In this way, in the association of Krishna conscious devotees, the living entity can get free from the contamination of material existence. In this connection, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, Tate Krishna Bhaje Kare Guru Rasevana Maya Jale Chute Paya Krishnera Charan. In the Krishna conscious state, the living entity engages in devotional service under the direction of the spiritual master. Kare Guru Rasevana. In this way, he gets out of the clutches of Maya and takes shelter under the lotus feet of Krishna. Text 30 and 31. So he's just explained, look what's going to happen, O King Prithinibharisha. You're going to wander from body to body to body. The suffering will never end. You're planning that the pleasure will never end, but actually in the material world, the suffering doesn't end. And then he describes what existence is like in the material world. Please listen. The living entity... He's speaking very, very strongly, trying to discourage him, trying to ruin all his idealistic plans. The living entity is exactly like a dog who, overcome with hunger, goes from door to door for some food. According to his destiny, he sometimes receives punishment and is driven out, and at other times receives a little food to eat. Similarly, the living entity, being influenced by so many desires, wanders in different species of life according to destiny. Sometimes he is high, sometimes he is low, sometimes he goes to the heavenly planets, sometimes to hell, and sometimes to the middle planets, and so on. We'll read some of Prabhupada's purport here. The living entity's position is herein likened to a dog's. By chance, a dog may have a very rich owner, and by chance, he may become a street dog. As the dog of a rich man, he will live very opulently. Sometimes in Western countries, we hear of a master leaving millions of dollars to a dog in his will. Of course, there are many dogs loitering in the street without food. Therefore, to liken the conditioned existence of the living entity to that of a dog is very appropriate. An intelligent human being, however, can understand that if he has to live the life of a dog, he had best become Krishna's dog. In the material world, when Prabhupada gave me initiation, he said this was a dog collar. In the material world, a dog is sometimes elevated and sometimes on the street. But in the spiritual world, Krishna's dog is perpetually, eternally happy. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has therefore sung Vaishnava Thakur Tomar Kukur Valiya Janaha More. In this way, Bhaktivinoda Thakur offers to become a Vaishnava's dog. A dog always keeps himself at his master's door and does not allow any person unfavorable to the master to enter. Similarly, one should engage in the service of a Vaishnava and try to please him in every respect. Unless one does so, he does not make spiritual advancement. Text 32. More on the living entity and his wandering. The living entities are trying to counteract different miserable conditions pertaining to providence of the living entities or the body and mind. So what is that? Adi Bhautika, Adi Daivika, any Adi Klesh. Still, he's trying to counteract them. These miseries come to this and he's trying to push them away. Still, they must remain conditioned by the laws of nature despite all attempts to counter these laws. We try so hard to avoid misery, but we cannot in this world. Prabhupada continues speaking about dogs. Just as a dog wanders here and there for a piece of bread, or punishment, that's his reward. He's wandering from door to door, getting sometimes bread, sometimes punishment. The living entity perpetually wanders about trying to be happy and planning in so many ways to counteract material miseries. This is called the struggle for existence. We can actually see in our daily lives how we are forced to make plans to drive away material conditions. To get rid of one miserable condition, we have to put ourselves in another kind of miserable condition. A poor man suffers for want of money, but if he wants to become rich, he has to struggle in so many ways. Actually, that is not a valid counteracting process, but a snare of the illusory energy. What does snare mean? Trap. It is a trap, thinking that I'll be happy if I remove the misery, when actually when we remove one misery, we just get some other bitterness and unhappiness. Maya is telling us, yes, only if you do this you'll be happy, don't worry. If one does not endeavor to counteract his situation, but is satisfied with his position, knowing that he has attained his position through past activities, he can instead engage his energy to develop Krishna consciousness. This is recommended in all Vedic literature. So here is such a, in these verses, there's such a concise description of how to proceed in Krishna consciousness. And it will get even more direct and more strong, the direct process. And then Prabhupada quotes, Tasyaiva hetu prayate to kovido na labhyate ad brahmaratam upariyada talabhyate dukavaranyatra sukham kalena savatra gavira ramasa. Persons who are actually intelligent and philosophically inclined should endeavor only for that purposeful end which is not obtainable even by wandering from the topmost planet of Brahmaloka down to the lowest planet. As far as happiness derived from sense enjoyment is concerned, it can be obtained automatically in course of time, just as in course of time we attain misery even though we do not desire it. And then to give an example of this, Prabhupada explained, or rather Narada Muni explains further. And this is what the advancement of modern civilization is compared to. A man may carry a burden on his head And when he feels it to be too heavy, he sometimes gives relief to his head by putting the burden on his shoulder. And that way he tries to relieve himself of the burden. However, whatever process he devises to counteract the burden does nothing more than put the same burden from one place to another. Narada continued. He's starting to reach his conclusion. Oh, you who are free from all sinful activity, no one can counteract the effects of fruitive activity simply by manufacturing a different activity devoid of Krishna consciousness. All such activity is due to ignorance. In other words, he wants to bring him to the point that if you wish to avoid suffering, don't try to attain any position in the material world that the material world can offer, that Maya is promising, that will be satisfying to you. No. He wants him to understand that the real solution to the problem is to get out of the material world. Nothing, no activity based on false ego, a false feeling of grandness, of greatness, of being the center of existence, can satisfy a soul. Rather, he'll explain it. All such activities, they're just transferring one problem to another. When we have a troublesome dream, we cannot relieve it with a troublesome hallucination. In other words, if you're in anxiety in a dream, and this happens many times, I experience this. I'm in anxiety, and then I want to get rid of the anxiety, and then I decide to go over here, and I wander to this place, and that leads me to somewhere else, and that leads me to... Does anyone else have these kind of weird dreams, and then you get lost, and you can't find your way back, and you can't figure out what exactly was troubling you, but you're lost and in complete anxiety? Am I the only one who has these troubled dreams? And you can't... But no, what is the obvious solution? To wake up. And then there's another kind of dream, which I've mentioned in this class many times, when you don't want to wake up. I haven't had this one in years and years, but I used to have it all the time. I'd be starting to wake up, and then I'd see some money on the ground. And then I'd say, wait a second, I'll wake up as soon as I pick up the money. And then right next to that money is some more gold coins. And then suddenly I see gold coins everywhere and I want to pick them all up. But I'm waking up and no, I don't want to wake up. When you have material desires, when you want something in the material world, when you see something that is the source of pleasure in the material world, you don't want to wake up. So what is it in the material world? Think. What is it in the material world, if we had it, would be worth having all the suffering of the material world? There is nothing. The material world means suffering. Krishna has certified it. And having attained this material world, which is dukkhalayam ashashvatam anitya sukham lokam, Krishna explains, having obtained this, the only solution is to wake up, which means bhajasva aham, that we should worship Krishna. We should worship Krishna with great, great devotion. So the ultimate solution, unless we awaken, one can counteract a dream only by awakening. Similarly, our material existence is due to our ignorance. An illusion, unless we awaken to our Krishna consciousness, awaken our relationship with Krishna. Krishna bhakti rasito bhavato mati. Awaken to our Krishna consciousness to taste the sweetness of our relationship with Krishna. Unless we do that, we cannot be relieved of such dreams. For the ultimate solution to all problems, we must awaken to Krishna consciousness. We have to go back to God. Sometimes, Narada continues, we suffer because we see a tiger in a dream. Has anyone actually ever seen a tiger in a dream? Yes? What happened? Yeah? Did you get away? Or did he eat you? Yes? One time I had a dream about there was a tiger. And I was one of these, there was a tiger on a rock, a big rock. And he was waiting for me as I was walking past. And I was one of these, you ever see these baba, these sadhus who live in the forest and they carry those metal axes? You ever see them? So I was one of those, and I was walking, and there was a tiger in a rock, big beard, and they're really strong usually. And the tiger jumped on me, and I was ferocious and strong too. So I tried to get him with my axe, with one, but I only had one. And he was ripping me apart, and I was wishing only if I had another axe in my other hand, and then I would be able to kill him. And in the dream, I died like that, wishing only if I... So next birth, what would I be? A two-axe sadhu or something like that. So whatever we're dreaming, the solution to our dream problem is, it's a false solution because it will just lead us to another situation in the material world. We've just transferred the burden from one place to the other. And what the real solution is to three axes. Yeah, to awaken. Huh? Awake. Awake means surrender. It means Krishna conscious. So sometimes we suffer because we see a tiger in a dream or a snake in a vision. But actually there is neither a tiger nor a snake. The one and the other kind of dream that makes me not want to wake up is when I'm flying. Does anyone also have flying dreams? Yeah. And then what happens is suddenly I realize if I just want to fly, I can do it. And then I start flying, and it's so exhilarating. I just think, why didn't I understand this before? That if I just want to fly, I could do it. And I'm flying all around. And then when you start waking up and losing the power, oh, you don't want to wake up. You don't want to lose the power. And that type of desire to be able to fly ends you up a bird or a pilot or something. But it's not worth it. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. Because whenever you're a bird, there's a bigger bird with big sharp claws. But in Vrindavan, one time I've seen, because the hawks, they eat other birds, they stay up there and they swoop down. But I've seen a whole group of parrots attacking a hawk, a whole flock. They were attacking a hawk and they were driving them away, and they're all going, my parrots are driving them away. I've seen a parrot attack a snake at Govanan. I was sitting under a tree at Govanan, quite close to the hill. And suddenly these parrots were there. And Govanan is so incredible. These parrots were there, and they were squawking and squawking and squawking. And I couldn't figure out why. And I looked up, oh, there are parrots there. And they were squawking and squawking. And then I looked closely, and I saw there was a snake trying to come out of the hole of the tree. And every time the snake would try to come out, the parrots would attack him and drive him back in. They would come with their claws towards him, and they would drive him back in. It's quite amazing, because I was sitting right there too. And then another time I was there, there's in the same place actually, these bees, Krishna decided that I shouldn't be sitting there anymore. So these bees came along, one, two, not very many, but one, and they were buzz and buzz very close to me. Actually, first I was sitting with a friend. We were both just sitting and chanting. And they would come and buzz very close. And then they forced him to get up and they forced him to leave. They made him leave. And then I thought, oh, he's not qualified like me. And then they came back and they did the same thing to me right after they finished with him. They came back and buzzed really close to me until I had to stand up. Then more came and they threatened to bite me and they made me leave too. Such an exceptional place. So thus, there is in the dream, there is neither tiger nor snake. Thus we create some situation in a subtle form and suffer the consequences. These sufferings cannot be mitigated, stopped, until we awaken from our dream. Now, the next section, we just finished 33, now 34 through 41. These verses tell us how to awaken from the dream, and that is by direct devotional service. The real interest of the living entity is to get out of the nescience that causes him to endure repeated birth and death. The only remedy is to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead through his representative. Samsriti tad vyavachedo bhaktya paramaya gurau. Unless one renders devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev, one cannot possibly become completely detached from this material world, nor can he possibly manifest real knowledge. So he's telling Pachini Barishat, you will never, ever be happy in the material world. Get out. Get out. The house is on fire. Get out. And the process, bhakti yoga. Complete. And that will award the detachment. Jnanirat asu vairagyam jnanam chayara haitukam. So this verse is even Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Samahita. Huh? So here is, we'll read from the beginning of Prabhupada's purport here. This is the way to become detached from the artificial material condition. So what did Prabhupada say in the previous verses that we should do? Well, okay. Before that, in his purport. Anyone remember? No? Okay, but just in the same, that purport, but a little before. Yes, but before that point. Yes, one has to understand the situation of the material world, that these selfish activities that we have performed, and perhaps that we still continue to perform on some level, they cause so much trouble to ourselves and other living entities, and they bind us in the material world. Therefore, one should recognize that we have to get out, and we have to lament and repent what we have done in this world. And then we should pray to Krishna to what? Engage us in his service. Allow me to serve you. And then keep one's consciousness fit. Follow very strictly, not plant more material desires in the heart and in the consciousness. No, we want to minimize. We don't want to stay here. We have to understand. This whole section is to convince us that there is no situation, even if we had all our material desires on the gross and subtle level fulfilled, we still would not be happy. What will satisfy the soul is when we love Krishna. So the only way to become detached from the artificial material condition, the only remedy is to take to Krishna consciousness and constantly engage in the devotional service of Lord Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Constantly, constantly. How much sincerity does that take? Ahaituki apratiyata. Continuously and unmotivatedly, with no cause, no trying to get anything, just because out of love for Krishna, out of understanding that we are Krishna's servant. And everyone is trying to be happy, and the process adopted to achieve that happiness is called self-interest. Unfortunately, the conditioned souls hovering within this material world does not know that his ultimate goal of self-interest is Vasudeva. Samsriti, or material existence, begins with the illusioned bodily concept of life, and on the basis of this conception, there ensues a series of unwanted things, anartas. These unwanted things are actually mental desires for various type of sense gratification. The heart must be cleansed of these desires, and the heart must be overcome by the desire, the intense desire to love Krishna and to serve him with great devotion. In this way, one accepts different types of bodies within the material world. One first has to control the mind so that desires of the material mind can be purified. This process is described in the Narada Pancharatra as sarva-pariva-nirmuktam tat-paradvena-nirmalam. Unless one purifies the mind, there is no question of getting free from the material condition. So now Prabhupada will state the process for purifying the mind, to remove these desires. Anartha upasamam shakshat bhakti yogam adhokshaje. Anyone know the remainder? Lokasya janato vidvan chakre satvita samita. The material miseries of the living entity, which are superfluous to him, that means anartas, they are not of him, can be directly mitigated, removed by the linking process of devotional service. But the mass of people do not know this, and therefore the learned Vyasadeva compiled this Vedic literature, the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is in relationship to the Supreme Truth. So that we have to read the Bhagavatam. This is Krishna, Dwapayana, Vyas, this is Krishna's own personal incarnation of Vesh, Shakta Vesh, for the purpose of compiling the Bhagavatam to give us Krishna in this form in Kali Yuga, to purify the heart of all these anartas, what does anartas mean? What? Undesirable desires, yes. Things that we, arta means wealth. And when you have wealth, you hold on to it naturally. Anarta means the things that we hold on to, but they are not our wealth, they are our miseries. The source of misery. Dukkha yona evate. Continuing. O best of kings, more continuing with the direct process. One who is always hearing the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, achyutakata. One who is always hearing the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is always engaged in the culture of Krishna consciousness, and in hearing the Lord's activities, very soon becomes eligible to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. Very important. We should never give up the hearing of Krishna Katha, of Bhagavatam. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Prabhupada's short purport. Constant engagement in the transcendental loving service of Vasudeva means constantly hearing the glories of the Lord. Constantly hearing about Krishna, his different forms, pastimes, names, qualities, pastimes, associates. The principles of bhakti yoga, shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam, parasevanam, archanam, vandanam, dasyam, sakyam, atnanavedanam, are the only means by which perfection can be obtained. So where did we recently hear this? What was happening in the pastime? Yes. Yes.
Seven daughters?
No, seven sons.
No?
Seven sons. One daughter who had beautiful, and seven sons. And those seven were these seven processes of Vaidhi Bhakti. These are the only means, these nine, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Parasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanavedanam, are the only means by which perfection can be attained. But it is constant. Simply by hearing of the glories of the Lord, one is elevated to the transcendental position. More. My dear King, in the place where pure devotees live, now here is the direct Abhideya Tattva he is describing, the processes that will elevate us and purify our heart. In the place where pure devotees live, following the rules and regulations, and thus purely conscious and engaged with great eagerness in hearing and chanting the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in that place, if one gets a chance to hear their constant flow of nectar, which is exactly like the waves of a river, one will forget the necessities of life, namely hunger and thirst, and become immune to all kinds of fear, lamentation, and illusion. So this is emphasizing the hearing and being, and this is the purpose of what temples are. Tandera charana sevi bhakta sanivas, janame janame hoy e abhilas. Prabhupada has stated in many places that the temples are meant to facilitate the hearing and chanting process, to give a facility for people to come and hear and chant, and for those who live in the temples to be always engaged in hearing and chanting. And in fact, there's one purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita that where Prabhupada talks about book distribution and making of life membership. And he said the glories of these two activities are that they engage one in talking directly about Krishna. And we have the tendency to somehow try to get the result and avoid Krishna. Like monkeys. Something like that. But the point is that we should, the consciousness, Krishna consciousness, we should be Krishna conscious. Prabhupada's purport. The cultivation of Krishna consciousness is possible where great devotees live together and constantly engage in hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. In a holy place like Vrindavan, there are many devotees constantly engaged in chanting and hearing the glories of the Lord. If one gets the chance to hear from pure devotees in such a place, allowing the constant flow of the river of nectar to come from the mouths of pure devotees, then the cultivation of Krishna consciousness becomes very easy because one becomes attracted, because it is sweet when it comes from an exalted Vaishnava. When one is engaged in constantly hearing the glories of the Lord, in other words, that devotee's taste will come to us, then he certainly rises above the bodily conceptions. When one is in the bodily conception, he feels the pangs of hunger and thirst and fear, lamentation and illusion. But when one is engaged in hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, he transcends the bodily conception. The word Bhagavad Guna Nukantana Shravanam Vyagra Chaitasa, meaning always eager to find the place where the glories of the Lord are being heard and chanted, is significant in this verse. A businessman is always very eager to go to a place where business is transacted. Similarly, a devotee is very eager to hear from the lips of liberated devotees. As soon as one hears the glories of the Lord from the liberated devotees, he immediately becomes impregnated with Krishna consciousness. That which is in the devotee's heart comes to our heart. This is also confirmed in another verse. Saptam prasangam mama virya sambhido bhavanti ritkana rasayana kata ita josanarasu apavagavatmani shradaratir bhaktir nukramishiti. In the association of pure devotees, discussion of the pastimes, this is the translation of the verse, the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very pleasing and satisfying to the ear and heart. Rasayana means that it will bring you to life. By cultivating such knowledge, one gradually becomes advanced on the path of liberation, and thereafter he is freed and his attraction becomes fixed. Then real devotion and devotional service begins. Prabhupada continues, in the association of pure devotees, one becomes attached to hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. In this way, one can cultivate Krishna consciousness. And as soon as this cultivation is advanced, one can become faithful to the Lord, devoted to the Lord, and attached to the Lord. So this is the process that, again, that Sanat Kumar described, that break the bodily attachment and become attached to Krishna. Again, Kapila Muni described the same thing. So here's the process, how to become attached to Krishna, so much based on hearing Krishna Katha. The secret of success in the cultivation of Krishna consciousness is hearing from the right person. A Krishna conscious person is never disturbed by the bodily necessities, namely eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Hearing from the right person. Is hearing from the right person. Both. You have to hear and it has to be from a proper devotee. Huh? Well, Prabhupada says that right after. A Krishna conscious person is never disturbed by the bodily necessities, namely eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. In other words, he's a devotee. He's fixed. His shelter is fixed. And that this is he surrendered to Krishna, and therefore Krishna is his shelter. And we saw this with Prabhupada, that he was there was a time when he first went to India, and he said, In after returning, and he had brought sannyasis, and there were devotees with him, and he wanted to spread the Krishna consciousness movement in India, and he said that I'm actually too old to be doing this, but I want to teach you by example how to preach. And then he started preaching, and it was 6 programs a day, And the more Prabhupada would preach, the more enthusiastic he would get. I didn't witness any of that personally, but I've read about it, I've heard about it. And he was a great example of a pure devotee, a terrible example of an old man. He refused to be his body. He was just a servant of Krishna. I saw examples of that, but not directly in that type of preaching. Quite amazing. And he would do these things, but there was never any passion involved either. One event would naturally follow the next, and there was no great tension and everything. He was always completely fixed in Krishna consciousness. You're okay? So inspiring too. And I remember one time sitting with him in Melbourne, many, many devotees were sitting there, And he was talking about how compassionate all the devotees were. And how they were preaching and everything out of their compassion. And I felt so terrible when he was talking like that, because I didn't feel an ounce or a millimeter, excuse me, of compassion in me or anything. And I thought no one else seemed to be suffering when he was speaking like I was suffering that. And then later on, I was teaching. And then I understood that a teacher, he speaks to the best part of a person. He speaks to the part of the person that you want to wake up and encourage. So he wanted the devotees, not that, later on I realized that everyone else was in the same position as me probably, but this was 1974 perhaps. But I saw that this is an expert teacher. That which you want to cultivate to grow in a person, you want compassion to grow, you show compassion and you speak to the compassion within the person, within people, and then it naturally grows. You speak to what you want them to be rather than what they are. You honor that and it will grow. Very expert. Because the conditioned soul is always disturbed by the bodily necessities such as hunger and thirst, he has very little time to cultivate attachment to hearing the nectarian words of the Supreme Personality of God. These are compared to whips, and what to speak of tiredness. These things are the forces of nature that whip us and they make such heavy demands. The hunger, the thirst, the desires of eating, sleeping, mating, defending, and they whip us and they refuse to allow us to cultivate Krishna consciousness. They put so many demands in our consciousness. They take away the most valuable thing, and that is the time that we have. So much so, in the case of a materialist, that they have no time for anything but the eating, the sleeping, the mating, and the fending. And they're thinking, they're choosing to be like that, but it's being whipped and whipped, because these things, they have to work so hard. Just to eat and sleep. And now even that, the eating, sleeping, mating, defending is so insecure. Everyone is so afraid of so many things, so much anxiety, such debt even. And insecure, I've even heard him speak about the insecure sex life even. Because the husband and wife, it's so rare that a husband and wife will stay together in Kali Yuga. So more anxiety, everything, anxiety. Even if you want to be a peaceful, cruel meat eater, you're afraid of getting this disease and that disease. You never heard of like, it's better, that will drive people to be vegetarians eventually, because you never heard of like mad lettuce disease or something like that, mad cauliflower fever. People will become vegetarian because of this. And it brings no satisfaction to the heart. So Prabhupada says in his purport, we'll read just a little of it, unless one is associated with devotees, he cannot cultivate Krishna consciousness. Nirjan bhajan, solitary Krishna consciousness, just chanting, cultivating Krishna consciousness in a solitary place is not possible for the neophyte, for he will be disturbed by the bodily necessities, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So many desires will come to his heart. Being so disturbed, one cannot cultivate Krishna consciousness. Therefore, what was the solution? Because in days gone by, The Goswamis would, so much of their time was spent, like Raghunath Das Goswami would chant 2 lakhs a day, 128 rounds a day. Plus he would write and read and speak to people and do dandavat, obeisances everywhere in Vrindavan, and no time for sleeping, no time for eating. But nowadays, I've told you that even recently I've told you about that Madhava Baba who gave the Vrindakund to ISKCON. He said, because he had been in Vrindavan as a Babaji his whole life, and his conclusion after seeing everything that goes on was that Bhakti Siddhanta, this is what he said in the last few weeks or months when he was leaving this world here. He said, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was right. That was his conclusion. In other words, that we don't have the piety in this age to do this type of bhajan. We don't have the purity in the age itself. And there's so many places. You see that in Puri, so many, Ramananda Roy and maybe Sarvabhauma Bhadra, everyone had caves. Big caves that they were small. And Sanatana Goswami and Gokul and Raghava Pandit at Govardhan, people, the devotees, they would, exalted, they would go into the ground in the heat just to block out the materialistic vibration, and they would chant and chant and chant and chant and chant and chant. But in this age, if you go under the ground, you have to take your crazy mind with you. And everyone's mind in Kali Yuga is upadrutaha, so disturbed by the atmosphere, by the this, by the that, by the sanskaras, by the... So his conclusion was without preaching, without getting some special mercy that from Krishna due to preaching, it's not possible to do this. And Prabhupada explains this in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that we preach when we're young and have energy, and then later in life, then one may have the purity to do this type of bhajan. Because being disturbed, one cannot cultivate Krishna consciousness. So difficult in Kali Yuga to have a peaceful mind, the most difficult thing, practically speaking. Okay, I was supposed to get up to 51, but I failed by a good 10 verses. We'll stop here. We may have to have another class. Better to do that than rush it. Right now we're finishing a little ahead of schedule. We may have to have class on Thursday. Hope that won't throw everything topsy-turvy. We'll see how we do in the next few days. Thank you very much. Shrima Bhagavatam ki jai, Shrima Bhagavatam ki jai. Any questions? A few moments of questions, even though we're already past time. Yes?
You said that we have to avoid the names since we're made of water.
We have to?
To avoid? Sorry, that we have to avoid the names since
we're made of
water. Yes. But how to regulate the symptoms and not to
become neurotic and by praying, by taking the if you have a sincere regret and sincere lamentation, immediately one's estimation of oneself, how one feels about oneself, comes down and one feels lowly. And in that consciousness, then one can pray properly and chant. Yes, but then you take shelter of Krishna. You don't spend all your time on that. The most of the time should be the taking shelter of Krishna. Thank you. We don't want to just become involved in the mind and how bad I am. I'm so terrible. I've done so many horrible things. No, but we want to use that energy to help us ensure that we don't do it again, and to help us use that very powerful energy of feeling lowly to approach Krishna. Because there's no benefit to just all day long thinking how terrible we are. Because then we're just thinking of ourselves. Is it? But that takes, as Prabhupada said, control of the mind. So what to do when the mind just wants to think about itself and how bad one is all the time? What to do? Huh? Yeah, stand in front of the deities, kirtan. Kirtan's very powerful. Because the mind speaks loudly, but you have to chant louder than the mind. Turn the volume up on the chanting. And the mind is a bluff. It's a bluff. When it's holding on to something, it makes you think it will never ever let go because this is so important. But as soon as it's distracted, it immediately gives up that very thing. And that it may convince you that this is the only thing going on. But then if it's distracted in 1 second, it can forget completely about that thing. You've noticed that? Okay, one more question. Comment. Yes.
My question is, from the point of view of the Vedic culture or Krishna consciousness, what's the dream is? What is the dream?
The
dream? Night dreaming?
What is the dream in the parallel, in the analogy?
Yeah.
In general.
Well, Prabhupada had said, sometimes night dream, day dream, it's all the same. It's your karma, your mind, just active mind going on. It's this active soul going on through the active mind at night. So but it's also, he said that to dream of Krishna or one's spiritual master is significant. But generally it's just flying through the material world in one way or another. Not so significant. Although sometimes it feels very significant, but not really so significant. It's some of the unconscious coming up in psychological terms, bubbling to the surface. Did you want to ask something? If anyone has to go, feel free to. No, it's not a bad thing. It's already way past time. You've already been tolerant enough. But the point is that one, in this section, there's another section where it's also described like this in Magrari, that's in Chaitanya Charitamrita, but somewhere else too, I think. That if you make any, the point is if you make any mistake and the proper result isn't gotten by the animal, you've just killed them. And in Kali Yuga, there are so many mistakes, one cannot do it perfectly. The Brahmins have to, the pronunciation of each word of the Vedic mantra has to be with the proper tones and pronounced properly, and they have to be pure and no faults. So if there's any mistakes, the proper result doesn't come. And if the proper result doesn't come, the animal has just been murdered. That's the idea. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Thank you.